250, continuing chapter 4, rules for snataka. 250. A couch, a house, kusa grass, perfumes, water, flowers, jewels, sour milk, grain, sweet milk, vegetables, let him not reject, if they are voluntarily offered. He who desires to relieve his gurus and those whom he is bound to maintain, or wishes to honor the gods and guests, may accept gifts from anybody, but he must not satisfy his own hunger with such presents. But if his gurus are dead, or if he lives separate from them in another house, let him, when he seeks a subsistence, accept presents from good men alone. So here is that if he's living with his teachers, then whatever he gets, he must receive, but that must be always given to the teacher, because the teacher is taking care, the teacher is maintaining. But if the guru has already died, or he has now graduated, he's going there, then he may use it, he may use himself. But those things that he uses from himself should be only for those who are of good character. Otherwise, the things should be given away, like that. He may accept them, but then he should give them. Yeah. The other aspect is that those whom he is bound to maintain, like the parents or that, or wishes to honor the gods and guests, then he may accept these gifts, but then he should use them for maintaining these personalities. 253. His labor in tillage, a friend of his family, his cowherd, his servants, his barber, are among shudras whose food he may eat. Likewise, a poor man who offers himself to be his dependent. So that means in his house, if he has someone who takes care of his fields, like that, then friend of his family, who takes care of his cows, who is like the personal assistants around the house, like that, then and his barber. They're amongst those who you may take food from, even though they are they are artists. Because of the connection there, the relationship that is there. There's a special relationship with these personalities. So this may be accepted. As his 254. As his character is, as the work is which he desires to perform, and as the manner is in which he means to serve, even so a voluntary servant must offer himself. So here, someone who wants to work under, this would be, nowadays you don't find this so much, but those who would come and become dependents, live in the house. Before, the shudras and that would live in the house, of one of the dwijas, or live in their, live under their care, and their property, either in the house, in some side houses, or whatever was arranged. And they were not paid, but they basically were just maintained as like part of the family. So this was situation. So then here, it's mentioning for someone who is like this, because it's brought up the point of someone who comes and offers that, I will work for you, and they'll be maintained. Then here it's giving details of this. As his character is, means according to his own nature, what is the work he desires to perform and which he will be able to do it, then in that way he should offer himself. In other words, he has to be very straightforward in what he can do. He can't just come up and say anything because he thinks that will get him taken in. But he must come and say, I have this ability, I can do this kind of work, this is the way in which I can do the work. So then he should present himself. Yeah. 255, he who describes himself to virtuous men in a manner contrary to truth is the most sinful wretch in this world. He is a thief who makes away with his own self. Because he's described what he is, but didn't tell actually the truth. So then someone, a virtuous person, will take someone for their word, like that, unless you can tell they're too devious. And then that will not be accomplished. So it'll create so much anxiety. So they're a thief. They take so much in what they're being maintained with, but they're not giving back what they should be. And so much anxiety and difficulty will be there for the persons that they work with, like that. Hare Krishna. All things have their nature determined by speech. Speech is their root, and from speech they proceed. But he who is dishonest with respect to speech is dishonest in everything. Probably makes the point of, you can tell a fool when they start speaking. Before they speak, they look like everybody else. Once they start speaking, then you say, this person doesn't know what he's talking about. So speech is the main root, because the hearing is first. That's the ether. You have the hearing. From the thinking, that they won't, you can't really know. Someone who's well studied may be able to see. But otherwise, you hear, first is hearing. That's the first thing that comes. Right? When the first aspect. One is, truth is learned by hearing. That's the main thing, by shabda. And also just in the manifestation of the elements, hearing is first, of the tanmatras. It's the first. Then you have the, how you say? Then after that, then you have the touch, but then the air carries the aromas. Like that. So then the smell, like this, comes down. I think Prabhupada once mentioned, if it was Bhakti Chumaraj or Jaipataka Maharaj, is that one time I was, it was after a big feast, you know, Janmashtami or Vyas Puja, Prabhupada's Vyas Puja, like that. And you have so many of those clay pots, you know, filled with prasad. And it was, you know, quite long back. I didn't know the prep so much, like that, the different preparations. And so I was trying to put them in order for serving. I knew what the order was, but I didn't, you know, no, I wasn't so experienced with the vegetables. So then I was taking it, looking at it, and smelling it to try to figure out, is it salty, is it sweet, is it sour, you know, what kind of thing like that. And then one of them saw me doing that. And then they made the point that Prabhupada, they had been doing that. And Prabhupada said, smelling is for the animals. The animals, then they learn by smelling, you know. They see something, but then they go and smell it to test it. He said, you know, and he made the point that, you know, humans, they go by seeing it. No, I mean seeing like that. So in other words, that is the main thing in there. That they test everything by smelling, like that. So the human, first by hearing, then by seeing, then if not, then by experiencing. Like that, so that the, you know, the animals automatically learn in this other way. So then, okay, 257. When he has paid according to the law his debts to the great sages, to the forefathers, and to the gods, let him make over everything to his son and dwell in his house, not caring for any worldly concerns. Okay, so when he's done whatever duties is there in the Grihastha Ashram, then he should turn everything over to the sun, and then he shouldn't worry about the worldly concerns, what happens, what doesn't happen, everything like this. 258. Alone let him constantly meditate in solitude on what is salutary for his soul, for he who meditates in solitude attains supreme bliss. Thus have been declared the means by which a Brahmana householder must always subsist. And the summary of the ordinances for a snataka, which causes an increase of holiness and praiseworthy, and are praiseworthy. A Brahmana who, being learned in the lore of the Vedas, conducts himself in this manner, and daily destroys his sins, will be exalted in Brahman's world. So here's more we see is the at the end of life, then he's supposed to detach himself from, leave everything to the sun, to others, then give up the worldly concerns, then in solitude he must be always absorbed in spiritual activities. And then if he does this, being learned in the shastras, and acts according to this, then he will be exalted in Brahman's world. So as we discussed before, then we have these, Sahutramaj gave a name for these kind of words. The words that mean something to somebody. They have a specific meaning for a particular group of people. Like that, and they see it in that way. So here we see exalted in Brahman's world. So we know, according to Brahman, there is no world. Right? It is just the Brahma Jyoti. So when we say in Brahman's world, means something that Brahman owns, because Brahman, to own means there must be duality. There must be variety, not duality. So there must be Brahman and something he owns that belongs to him. Right? So the Brahmavadis will just say exalted in Brahman's world, and they'll just take it to Brahma Jyoti. But Brahman's world, the supreme Brahman, or Parabrahman, is Krishna, is the Lord. So in Krishna's world, means the Vaikuntha, or the spiritual realm, then he will be exalted there. He will be able to elevate himself there. So all these rules that are here that apply for the Vaishnavas, means after we take out these elements of debts that we owe to the sages, to the mains, to the gods, like this, that we owe to Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, we're taking the direct method. But when we follow all these rules nicely, then the purpose of them are to help us elevate ourselves to the spiritual realm. So the Vedic culture is very important to understand that you have a standard that we're at today. Then one situates oneself within the takes assistance of the Varnashram system to follow those rules to purify ourselves. Because we must do something in connection with the Lord. So the Lord gives rules that connect everything with himself. Does that make sense? We lost you there. It means I have a conditioned nature. I like to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. Right? I have so many activities I like to do. I like to dress nicely. I like to do so many different things. I like to talk with friends. I have relatives. I have, family members. I have my house. I have guests. So I like all that. So now, how am I going to... The point of elevation means this is where I am at now. So how to take that and engage that in the Lord's service? Right? So Krishna has written rules for all these. How you take care of a guest, how you maintain your house, how you maintain the family, how you relate with the family, how you deal with relatives, how you eat, how you sleep, how you mate, how you defend. So then I take all those rules and now I start living according to that. And then the purpose is to elevate me. The idea is not that I can't attain the brahminical status, so I just find something lower to... No. It's the opposite. It's for elevating ourselves to that platform. Not that I can't be on that platform, therefore I do. We understand, okay, Krishna starts from the top, because that's the Vedic system. It's very interesting. As you'll notice that in the Shastra, when it talks about Uttam Kanishtha Madhyam, it always starts with the qualities of the Uttam, then describes the qualities of the Madhyam, then describes the qualities of the Kanishtha. It always starts with the top and then comes down. Because the top is always the essence. Right? It means where one's trying to get to, the standard. Then you come down from that. Right? This is the process of that it's coming from authority, shabda, descending process. While we see material world, we always do it the other way. Devotees will describe, they'll always describe it with Kanishtha Madhyamutam. But it's always the other way around. You always give what's the top, and then you give what's the adjustments. But now, even though it's presented in this way, from the top down, but that doesn't mean that all these levels aren't for the purpose of elevating us to that. It means the process has no real foundation if there's not a goal. So if we don't have a goal to what we're doing, there's no real meaning to the process. Then the process is not intelligently thought out. Like, okay, I can't follow all those high standards, so I just follow whatever I can. okay, that's very nice, but if that's where the that's end of sentence, bus, that means then we're not using our intelligence, because I'm not on that higher platform, I'm on this lower platform. I follow this so I can get to the higher platform, right? That is complete understanding. When we say, oh, we can't do that, and just step back, oh, don't be fanatic. This means these are the statements. These statements are not well informed. They're not well thought out. They're not coming from a platform of education. Here it says, a Brahman, being learned in the lore of the Vedas, conducts himself in this manner. So you have to know something, then one can speak so eloquently, right? Otherwise, anyone can say, don't be fanatic. But why we don't just take everybody's opinion, right? Opinion has no basis, right? Unless there's a standard to compare it to. So what is the standard by which we're saying don't be fanatic? Right? There must be something. Otherwise, how do you know it's fanatic or not? Right? Well, one man's food is another man's poison. Because everybody in their opinion has a different standard. So unless there's a specific standard, then you can compare it, then you can say, this is fanatic. No, this is all right. So when you have a standard, then you can say what it is. And so that standard is given by God himself. Because when we talk culture, that is dharma. And dharma is given by God. No one else. No one else can give dharma. That. So when we take it, compare it to that, to the dharma, then we can see, is this fanatic or not? So the dharma of the Vedic culture gives from paramahamsas down to those who are atheists. So surely someone who is a devotee will fit somewhere in between there. You know, so they're included in the whole Vedic scheme. So now you just have to find your place. So for me, it may be fanatic, but for someone else, it may not be. So if I can't accept that the other person can work at a slightly different level, then what does that mean? That's not fanaticism. That's called fascism. So we're saying another devotee's fanatic, but our statement of that is fascist. Because I can't do it, nobody should do it. Because they're doing it, they're just making a show, they're not honest, this, that. Why? Because I am the ultimate standard. What my mind thinks, this is the actual standard. Compared to that, I judge everything else. Atmavan manyate jagat. So one has to be very careful. So here, we must understand is that wherever we're situated, we understand that we have a goal that we're trying to get to. Then we are humble. Otherwise, if everyone else is fanatic, that means we're proud. And it's already, we discussed that yesterday and the day before, about the difficulties in being proud. So now if someone on a very highly qualified service and position is proud, and that's said not to be good, let alone someone on a lower standard who is proud. That's why it is suggested that the Brahmin doesn't eat at the houses of certain people, because their standard is lower and their consciousness is lower. But it pointed out that if the external standards may seem lower, but if the consciousness is good, right, then that is better. Their activities become pure. That doesn't mean breaking principles is that. This means that someone is, how you say, someone may be doing business, right? So business may not be as good a situation as doing brahminical activities. But if someone's doing business and they're fully absorbed in devotional activities, and they see their business as belonging to the Lord, you know, and they engage themselves in the Lord's service, then they're purified, they're devotees. So that doesn't affect the situation. But if we're on that platform, and then we're proud of that, and then anybody else who is attempting to situate themselves on a higher platform, you know, materially higher platform, then we say, oh, that's fanatic, or this or that, or they're not real, or they're not honest, and this and that. This is not a proper opinion, because you cannot have the same standard for everybody. I mean, if it worked, then, you know, China would be the leading, or would have been the leading, you know, cultural, you know, what do you call it, entity in the planet. Because they did everything, everybody is the same. Right? Now they're being a little more liberal, but before that, even the clothes were the same. The same cut, the same color, and they even took it as far as the same size. Right? Right? Some devotee told me, says they had size 36, and they did recognize that some people were a little bit bigger, and they had size 42. So basically, those will fit everybody. So therefore, they had equality. Everyone wore the same cloth, same colored cloth, same cut, and same size. So that's, then we, okay. So the point is only someone who tries to make everything equal, they'll fail. If one can't see the difference in situations, difference in the, then this is not individual. In the name of individuality, we try to make everything the same. Oh, I'm an individual, you know, you have to give me my space, I can't do what everybody else is doing, or I did that. But at the same time, no one else can do it, right? They're not individual. I'm an individual, I have my space, I deserve my space, everybody should be broad-minded. But for everybody else, you know, that means everybody else should be very liberal with me. Why? Because I'm the center of the universe, of course. But I can maintain the fascist attitude towards others. It means they can't do it, you know, whatever they're doing, it's all show, all these different things like this and that. You know, they shouldn't be allowed to do these different things. I should control everything they do, you know, or have a say in everything they do. We'll make a committee, I'll sit on it, I'll give my opinion. I'll take no responsibility, of course. I mean, that's not why we want the committee. Committees aren't to take responsibility. Committees are not to get things done. Committees are there to see that no one bothers my space. Right? That's what a committee's for. A committee is there to see that nobody makes a decision that's going to affect me that I don't like. Right? No one dreamed up committees to get things done. Right? Because the Vedic system never takes committees on their own. There's always a person who has a say after that has to get it done, right? Even in the modern things, you have a chairman, and the chairman actually has to see that what the committee decided gets it done, you know? So he actually is the hands-on manager. So there's always a person. But where you have a committee where everyone just gets together, throws out their opinion, then afterwards it closes, and then they go away, it hasn't worked in the past, it's not working today, it won't work tomorrow either. They can't work. Right? Leadership means people. No? Yeah. You gave the leadership course. What do you say, Pankaj Swami?
Very interesting story that I heard from General Schwarzkopf.
Mm.
When he was being trained to be the general.
You heard it personally?
Well, I was one of 3,000 in the room at the
time. Oh, okay.
He was saying when he was being trained to be the general, the previous general was in his office, and some people came in and they said, well, we've been discussing for about 2 years now this very difficult decision, and we've got a couple of options available. So they showed it to this general.
The previous general.
The general who was in charge at that time. And he looked at it and he said, plan A. He looked at it for 2 minutes.
Hmm.
So then after the people left, Schwarzkopf said to him, he says, you don't know anything about that decision that you just made, you know, but you made a decision anyway. They've been discussing for like 2 years about this. And the general said, well, I made a decision. You know, if I didn't make this decision, they'll be discussing for another 2 years, still nothing will get done. But at least if I make a decision, there's a lot of intelligent people in this U.S. Army. If it's a bad decision, it'll be corrected. But until the decision's made, then nothing will happen. Mm. So it's quite interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
Approach.
Yeah. And in that, there must be responsibility. He said plan A, so then if it comes back, then he'll have to accept that it wasn't right. That's the other thing. Now, the modern thing is no one wants to accept the wrong, so then that makes it very difficult. But the point is responsibility means that there's also the glory of it comes and the bad of it comes. Yeah. Okay, chapter 5. And that ends chapter 4.
They also give the example of a camel. That a camel is a horse created by the committee.
Camel's a horse created by a committee. Yeah. Like that. It means in the Vedic they would use committees, but there's always someone on top to make a decision and to see that it gets carried out. Like that. Because the thing is, if you have a committee along with you know, some authority, then it works, because then you get opinions. That's what a king in his court means. But ultimately, he takes the decision because he takes responsibility. But generally, many times we see is a committee wants to make the decision, but they don't want to take the responsibility, either to get it done or when it's something's wrong. Because if then you go to on the committee and say, hey, this is a crazy decision you guys made. Well, I didn't vote for it, you know, or I didn't like this. It always, you know, goes around and no one can catch anyone, isn't it, you know? It's just, and then everybody's frustrated because then they feel that there's nothing is being led. You know? So we have to be very, very careful. The whole concept is coming up because of the idea is I don't trust anybody else. So therefore, I want to be involved. Yeah. And you have to have a very broad spectrum of people. It means that normally you choose a committee of people who can work together. But many times I've seen modern concept is you can't have that. You have to have a very broad spectrum, right? Like that, someone representing all the different opposing views. And then it's not that the people who present that should be there, generally don't have a good idea how to get things done. They're just afraid that if one group of persons with a certain view, then they'll make decisions that I don't like. So let's throw in a few other people that we know will oppose their view. That way then, you know, there's an idea that then good will come out of it, right? Out of chaos comes something, right? The Big Bang Theory, isn't it? All the scientists agree with it. They're very intelligent. But unfortunately, they're not managers, right? Scientists dream up the Big Bang Theory. But they're not managers. If they were managers, you couldn't agree with the Big Bang. You know, you have to start with something and people have to get it done. Like that. So that's what's going on in the universe. So it's an interesting. So you have that. So the committee is there, they speak, but the king makes a decision. And so if it goes well, he gets the credit. If it goes bad, he gets the blame. And it can't go to anyone else. And he will take the blame. He's a good king. And if someone comes and gives good argument, he will change. Like that. But otherwise. Ooh, here it is, here it is. It is coming, verse 5. Chapter 5. The sages, having heard the duties of a snataka, thus declared. The sages, having heard the duties of a snataka thus declared, spoke to great-souled Bhrigu, who sprang from fire. How can death have power over brahmanas who know the sacred science, the Veda, and who fulfill their duties if they have been explained by thee, O Lord? Righteous Bhrigu, the son of Manu, thus answered the great sages, here in punishment of what fault death seeks to shorten the lives of brahmanas. For through neglect of the Vedic study, through deviation from the rule of conduct, through remissiveness in the fulfillment of duties, and through faults committed by eating forbidden food, death becomes eager to shorten the lives of brahmanas. Here it is. 5. Garlic, leeks and onions. Notice it included leeks. Like that, you know, those funny things that spring onions, you know, they chop up, cook in the Manipuri cooking. Onions, mushrooms, and all plants springing from impure substances are unfit to be eaten by twice-born men. Right? I've heard it. Many, many years I've heard it been spoken by many. There's no Shastric quotes that you can't eat these things. Unfortunately, the Lord has revealed the verse. Well, let's see. We'll get to it. But it mentions that, because otherwise some brought up that it's not mentioned. You know? But here, it just says that these are things that it says unfit to be eaten by twice-born men. It just says why death shortens the lives of brahmanas. Because they were saying that someone who lives according to this, why would death come? How can death have the power over brahmanas? Like that. Because the point is death doesn't have power over someone who is very strictly following. They may die, but they're not controlled by death. Because then they're under the control of the Lord. But death can have some control, shorten the life, and create anxiety and problems for those who don't live a pure lifestyle. Huh? Says, through neglect of the Vedic study, through deviation from the rule of conduct, through remissiveness in the fulfillment of duties, and through faults committed by eating forbidden food, death becomes eager to shorten the lives of brahmanas. So if they don't study properly, they don't follow the proper etiquette, they don't perform their duties properly, and by eating forbidden food. Six. One should carefully avoid red exudations from trees and juices flowing from incisions. The slew fruit? What slew? And the thickened milk of a cow which she gives after calving. It means this, I think, I can't remember how many days. But after the cow has a calf, there's so many days that milk is not drank. I don't remember. Is it, how many days? 10, 11? More. 17 or 19. There's certain days that the milk is heavier because it's specifically meant for the calf, and others shouldn't drink it at that time. I think generally they take that and pour it into water, isn't it? Means what the calf can't drink, then they milk the cow the rest of that and pour that into the water. Okay, rice boiled with sesame, wheat mixed with butter, milk and sugar, milk rice, and flour cakes, which are not prepared for a sacrifice. So it means all these things, rice, milk, sugar, all these things are meant for sacrifices. So if you prepare these things and don't offer them to the Lord, then those are considered forbidden. Yeah. Or it says here, milk of a cow or other female animal within 10 days after calving. Then milk of the camels, that's suggested one doesn't drink. Of one-hooved animals, I guess that means like horses and pigs and stuff like that. Laugh, but in Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Yeah, and in South America also, in Peru, they sell pig's milk, like that. It's considered very high grade because it's very rich, the milk, like that. We just came across, we're just going through the Manusamhita, and it just mentions here that Brahmins shouldn't eat garlic, leeks, onions, mushrooms, and all plants springing from impure substances, like that. Because it was many times I've heard devotees challenge that there's no scriptural evidence against eating onions and garlic like that. So there is a verse.
It also seems to suggest that if the fertilizer is not proper, you shouldn't eat food that's coming from that ground.
Not so much. Springing from impure substances means they'll come out of something that's impure, an impure place. Generally, like you see, is the stories here. I haven't come across it, but somebody I heard in South, one Brahmin was telling me that according to the Puranas, then the first onions and you know the garlic, all these were found growing out of the side of a dead cow. So that's why they're considered like meat. They're considered non-vegetarian, Hare Krishna, because of just the nature of when they have, how you say, where it has come from. The milk of all wild animals, excepting buffalo cows, that of women, and all substances turned sour must be avoided. Among things turned sour, sour milk and all food prepared of it may be eaten. Likewise, that what is extracted from pure flowers, roots, and fruit. Okay, so that means you could do things, you know, how you say, when you take milk goes sour, then buttermilk, these can be used, even though it's sour. Many times in South, then they have all these clay jars, and they keep the sour milk, and so after the first day it's kept in the first one, and then the next day it's poured into the next, and then you know today's sour milk is put in the first one, and then it goes to the second, like this, it goes down the line like that, getting more and more sour, and then it's used in different preparations depending upon. See, here comes the frog. Yeah, like that. So milk, Prabhupada mentions milk never goes bad. So then that can be used. And it says pure flowers, fruits, roots, and fruits. So then also things like achar, they may be sour, but that can be used. They're from pure fruits, roots, like many of the fruits, they're sour. So those things can be eaten. But otherwise, other things, when they go sour, then one has to be very careful. Okay. Then it goes to also said one shouldn't eat those birds which scratch with their toes. So that means it appears chickens aren't high on the list. It says meat from a slaughterhouse and dried meat. Village pigs, all kinds of fishes. I mean, it goes through actually nothing that can be eaten. Ooh, here's the one Prabhupada mentions. He who eats the flesh of any animal is called the eater of the flesh of that particular animal. You know? He who eats fish is an eater of every kind of flesh. Like that. Prabhupada always said the fish eaters are the lowest, because then they eat everything, because the fish eat garbage. They eat everything. Like that. Here, 19. A twice-born man who knowingly eats mushrooms, a village pig, garlic, a village cock, onions, or leeks will become an outcast. He who unwittingly partakes of any of these shall perform a samtapa, sacrifice, or the lunar penance, Chandranana, of ascetics, In case he has eaten any other kind of forbidden food, he shall fast for one day and a night. Oh, this is interesting. It says here, all lawful hard or soft food may be eaten, though stale, after having been mixed with fatty substances, and so may the remnants of sacrificial offerings. So something that's been offered, prashad, even though it gets a little bit old, it can still be eaten. It is not, it means it's too old, but that means it does. It's not considered forbidden. It may be, you know, not well appreciated, but it's not that. There's an interesting thing about mixed with fatty substances. There's a tradition in South after the weddings, because generally a wedding means you're fitting a lot of people, right? Reception and many people come. You don't know exactly. You've invited so many, but you don't know how many will actually come. So it's one can never run out of food. It's just not. It couldn't happen. It's just. You wouldn't allow it to happen. It's just one of those things. So they'll generally cook a lot. And generally at the end, you'll find that there'll be a lot left over. Put it more close. It's right next to it. There'll be a lot left over. So then what they do is they take it all. They take it all and they put it into a big pot. It means everything. Salty, sweets, everything. Everything goes into one big pot. And then they pour in a ton of ghee, and then a whole bunch of chilies and like that, throw it in. And then they just start cooking it. Just cook, 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 until it cooks it down into this thick mass. And it has a very special, it's like a khichdi. It's a very special, rich kind of khichdi like that. And that's, then that is being, you know, then they eat that for, you know, some days, because that'll keep forever, that stuff. So it's mentioning here, if there's being mixed with fatty substances, like that, like with ghee, then it can be. Thus has the food allowed and forbidden to twice-born men been fully described. I will now propound the rules for eating and avoiding meat. Frog, I think he's trying to say class is supposed to end. Yes. Yeah, it seems to be. You would think that they would make a few rules for them. Yeah, here it says, what is destitute of motion is the food of those endowed with locomotion. Animals without fangs are the food of those with fangs, those without hands of those who possess hands, and the timid of the bold. So here it mentions the consumption of meat is befitting for sacrifices. That is declared to be a rule made by the gods. But to persist in using it on other occasions is said to be a proceeding worthy of rakshasas. Yeah. A twice-born man who knows the law must not eat meat except in conformity with the law. For if he has eaten it unlawfully, he will, unable to save himself, be eaten after death by his victims. Like that. But in this age, then these sacrifices aren't performed. They don't have any purpose. And this is also for those, we understand from the story with Muchukunda, that he saw the Lord. The Lord came to, you know, wake him up and to save him. But he couldn't, in that life, go back to Godhead. It was said he would have to take birth again in the Brahmin family because, as a Kshatriya, he had killed so many animals. Like that. So these things of eating meat and these karmakanda sacrifices, these are for people who want to stay in the material world. They want to go to heavenly planets and this and that. That's their purpose. The reason that then there's no sin in that, that the person, that the animal doesn't come back to eat them, is that in the sacrifice, means someone to take an animal birth means he has committed some sin. So then in the sacrifice, what happens is that the animal is sacrificed and the animal is elevated to a human birth, either on this planet or on the higher planets. So then that means that the sins that had him as an animal then have to be taken by those who are doing the sacrifice. This generally isn't talked about so much. So this is why after they sacrifice the animal, they eat some of the animal, because with that eating, they get all the karma that made them an animal. You understand that principle? So it's one of the things that you don't hear talked about in the Karmakanda section. This is talked about in other sections. Because if you talked about that, then the Karmakandi might not be too enthusiastic to do these activities. Right? But because they want these, they want to enjoy, then they'll just take up sinful activities. So then their tendency towards sinful activities is engaged in the Karmakanda by doing pious activities. So at least then you have them behaving piously. So we can see all this is for the lower mentality. This is not meant for those who want to go back to Godhead. Therefore, for such persons, then these sacrifices themselves aren't performed. And in the Kali Yuga, you can't get any proper Brahmins who can perform the sacrifice. It means before they start these big sacrifices like this, where they're going to do this, then they generally bring the Brahmins, and then they test them by seeing that they take an old cow, hold it by the tail, push it into the fire, and with chanting of mantras, they pull the cow out by the tail, and it's a calf. Right? Then they know, okay, these Brahmins have power. Then they can do an Ashrameda Yajna, kill the horse, it becomes a Gandharva, and then they take all that karma. Right? And then the king then goes to the heavenly planets, and then, you know, the Brahmins get their dakshin, but they've taken all that karma. The reason they get the dakshin is, one is their ability to perform the sacrifice, two is they take that karma. But they have the power to burn that off, but still, they're also karmakandis. And their purpose of doing all this also is to get themselves to the heavenly planets. So then the whole thing is very mundane. So you don't have those kind of Brahmins, and this kind of endeavor is useless. As we see in the Bhagavatam, Maharaj Puchina Barhishat, he was doing very nicely all his Karmakanda Yajnas and killing all the animals and doing all these things. And then Narad Muni came to him and, you know, started to, you know, instruct him in all that. But he was not overly, you know, receptive. And then he gave him a vision where he could see all the animals that he had killed, and they're all waiting to, you know, poke him and bother him and everything. So then it was kind of like it got serious for him. So now he wanted to know, what should he do? So then he told that whole story of Puranjana to then show how his life has been and how he has to change this and come to the platform of pure devotional service. So then that was taken up. So anyone who is interested in pure devotional service doesn't take up these activities of the Karmakanda, these sides. These are for the purpose of giving Karmakanda fruit. So that we don't do, right? Because Nishkam Karma Yoga means I do my activities for pleasing Krishna, the fruit's going to Krishna. Now I could say, okay, now I am doing, you know, the activities of you know, what I do with the body, you know, nicely do my household duties. These is also described here in the Manasamhita. So then if I can do that for Krishna, why I can't do these sacrifices of offering animals and all that? right? Because Krishna himself is not going to accept it. I do the sacrifice, but Krishna is not going to accept that. He's not going to accept that offering. He'll only accept, you know, milk, fruit, grains, you know, and things like this. So those sacrifices can't be done. So that means then we perform those sacrifices that Krishna likes. And in this age, then he likes the chanting of the holy name and those which are in relationship to the deity, the festivals of the deity and you know, the daily worship of the deity, like that. Those can be accepted. Then it works nicely. So we can see is that in previous ages, for those who are interested in staying in the material world, they could do so many things. But that doesn't mean that we today can take advantage of those. Because, one, the fruits of those are anyway material, which is not our interest. And two, one couldn't possibly do them anyway. He doesn't accept because it's not what he does. I mean, see, Krishna, we worship Krishna. The idea is we will go to Krishna when we're ready to go to his place. We want to go back to Godhead. So back to Godhead means you're going to his place. So then when Krishna, going to his place, we find that in Goloka he's eating fruits and vegetables and nice, wonderful vegetarian things cooked by, you know, Rohini Mataji and Srimati Radharani and all the cowherd, you know, women of Vrindavan. So you want to move in his world, this is what you have to offer him. You know, if you don't have, okay, we can't light 100 fires and cook unlimited preparations. So at least a fruit, flower, you know, like this, a leaf, some water, we can offer like that. So it's a matter of that we're trying to get back to that. So if we try to find loopholes in the thing, like those yogic Brahmins were doing before the appearance of Buddha, they were doing sacrifices just to kill animals so they could eat them. They were in no way benefiting those animals, putting them in the human form of life. There was no mentality of that this was duty to go to the heavenly planets. This is simply they liked eating animals. So they were killing all these animals in the name of sacrifice. Therefore, Buddha had to come and to get him to stop because they were so attached. And they'll say, well, hey, wait a minute. You say don't eat these animals. Right here, Shastra says we can. But then they were misunderstanding the point because that's what it says. That is declared to be rule by the gods, but to persist in using it on other occasions is said to be a proceeding worthy of Rakshasas. So they were having the mentality of Rakshasas. So then Buddha comes, and since they're misquoting the Shastra, then he just says, no Veda. Kicks out the Veda and then makes them nonviolent. Then when they're nonviolent, then they are now fit to understand the Veda again. Then it's reintroduced by Shankara and then put into its proper devotional understanding by Ramanuja and Madhva. Then Lord Chaitanya comes with his mission and establishes the ultimate purpose of the Vedic culture. You know, like that. It means that the central of the Harinam Sankirtan and going and worship of Radha and Krishna. So like that then. Here. Yeah, and then we read this, no? The one about the... For if he has eaten it unlawfully, he will unable to save himself, be eaten after death by his victims. He'll be eaten by those animals. That's that principle of moksha. It says, after death, the guilt of one who slays a deer for gain is not as great as that of he who eats meat for no sacred purpose. As many hairs of the slain beast has, so often indeed will he who killed it without lawful reason suffer a violent death in future births. Herbs, trees, cattle, birds, and other animals that have been destroyed for sacrifices receive being reborn into higher existences. Then here, he who does not seek to cause the suffering of bonds and death to living creatures, but desires the good of all beings, obtains endless bliss. He who does not injure any creature attains without an effort what he thinks of, what he undertakes, and what he fixes his mind on. Meat can never be obtained without injury to living creatures, and injury to sentient beings is detrimental to the attainment of heavenly bliss. Let him therefore shun the use of meat. Is after this describing that one could use the animals in various sacrifices and all this, and if it's done according to exact law, the animal takes a higher birth, this, that, and so many different things, then it says that if he actually wants to get to some, you know, higher level, then he should avoid meat. Because if one creates pain to other living entities, then he will not be able to elevate himself properly. Yeah. 49. Having well considered the disgusting origin of flesh and the cruelty of fettering and slaying corporal beings, let him entirely abstain from eating flesh. He who disregarding the above rules does not eat meat like a paisach becomes dear to men and will not be tormented by diseases. He who permits the slaughter of an animal, he who cuts it up, he who kills it, he who buys or sells meat, he who cooks it, he who serves it, he who eats it, must all be considered as the slayers of the animal. Seem to be missing a few pages here. Yeah. I'm missing two pages here. Okay, any questions on this section? Because that's all we have. And it goes into another section. Okay. So basically we see here is that we're discussing what could be eaten and not eaten. And then after discussing how all these sacrifices could be performed, one who is actually desiring of elevating himself then doesn't involve himself in these kind of things. Because so many times before we see that the Manu is stating that one who is kind to all living entities, and that then they can attain to the topmost platform of transcendence. They can enter the spiritual realm. Right. So these other considerations are for those people who are not interested in getting out of the material world. Yeah. Anything on this, or?
No? Sometimes the use of these things for medical purposes, for the movies, that is also not proper.
Means devotees use it for medical purposes. Well, generally, there's always something that one can. There's for, especially like in Ayurveda, for every disease, there's generally around 20 different cures. And it gives 20 different ones because in your locale, certain herbs or certain minerals or other things may not be available. So there's a wide variety of things that can be done. So generally, one doesn't have to deal with these things. You know, it's not important.
I read in another edition of my Samhita that to take Anjaneyagalik actually takes away one's Brahma consciousness.
It may come up later. It's like if it's forbidden for twice born men, then by eating it, then generally one would lose something. What was that? Huh? Where the frog just went? Really, from where?
I don't know.
Where it came
from.
Huh? It came from Mataji.
Oh, so that means everyone's excluded except for the two Matajis. Okay. Yeah. Like that. You have to be careful whose it is. It's the penguin one. Yeah, what's his name? I showed that to Krishna Kshetra, and he mentioned that he remembered his professor talking about that, how her professor somehow or another didn't find the translation very good, or Krishna Kshetra's professor didn't find the translation very good. Like, she always talks about inner heat, and then if you look in this one, you find inner heat, what it means is austerity. You know, performing tapasya, so she calls it inner heat. So like that sometimes. But basically it means that. Is one will unknowingly, then that's one thing. Knowingly, then it says one must do some purification, one must fast for a day or something. Otherwise then it will affect the consciousness. The consciousness is affected, then one loses the brahminical platform. So one could take it in that way. But one has to be a little careful in some of what is being written there. I mean, in all of them, unless we get a very nice translation done by some devotees. You know? Otherwise, none of these persons actually understand the law. You know, and or the devotional process, so it makes it very difficult. Anything else? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Oh. I always find it very interesting that whatever is the main verses that give like the conclusions, you know, sometimes there's a whole section of details, and then when it comes to the part about the conclusions, you know, which are the most essential verses, you always find those in Prabhupada's books. And any details that actually apply to the devotees, you also find in Prabhupada's books. So I've found up to now is anything that actually had application to devotees, has not been left out of Prabhupada's books. It's there in the purport, or it's there in the original verses. Like that. Interesting to note that chickens are not considered edible. Because they would have some around the village, but they wouldn't keep them for eggs and stuff like that. You know, they were just around because in the morning they crow. You know, the important thing about chickens is the male chicken then will crow three times in the morning before the sun rises, so that you know what is the time. Because they'll always do it at the same time. Yeah. Also, it's interesting is forgetting the Sanskrit, the length, short, long and short of the verse, the syllables. Then example is given of the crow of the cock. It means the first sound they make is half matra. The second one that they make is a full matra. And the third one they make is a double matra. Yeah? Right? Yeah. And all over the world it's like that. So simply from hearing them, then you know how short, when it says something is only one unit, you know what it is, because it's just as long as the first sound of the cock. And then if it's a full, like when we put a line over an A, means if it's just an A by itself, it's the length of the first one. And if we put a line over it, it's the length of the second one. And then only in certain circumstance it becomes triple. It becomes a Mahapurush. Then it's of the third. Like that. So like that, then. So that's the use of chickens. They wake you up, and you know the Sanskrit. Other than that, they're not supposed to be eaten.